This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Today on the radio show, Wednesdays are busy. Wednesdays, we have John Martin in the next segment. He's got a column up at the Daily Memphian that we'll be talking about here in a moment. Chris Harrington, we're endeavoring to be straight up at 10 o'clock. I've sort of fibbed on the straight up part, but Jeffy, I thought we were pretty good yesterday. Don't you?
You did.
Think pretty good yesterday. Nailed it.
You did better than my show, and I'm in control of my show.
And then Sam Hardiman. Turns out, Jeffrey, we own a hotel. We own a hotel. You and me.
One little share.
Don't you think we get like? Well, how many rooms are there? You know, like whatever.
The Sheridan's a big hotel.
The Sheridan's a big hotel. I think we should each have a room. You know, like this is the Jeff room on the third floor, and fix that baby up, get the coffee maker, automate the coffee maker there, and...
So I'm reading 600.
Okay, well, that's not a room. That's a, in fairness...
So maybe, like...
That's not a room for every Memphian, but we could do timeshares.
Correct.
You know, we could have a week every Memphian.
And honestly, I mean, what, we paid $22 million for it? Maybe we should kind of, you know...
Every Memphian could have 1 week downtown. The math on that's a little more sophisticated for me.
Listen,
too.
We're in the idea phase. We haven't hammered out the details.
We're in the idea phase. We're in the idea phase. Great thinkers get together.
Mm-hmm.
All of us in Memphis have 1 week in our downtown hotel, and we can stay there. I believe, this is a word that I just coined, staycation.
Mm. I like
that. I'm going to call it a staycation.
You can make that a social media movement.
And you could go down and you could. Head to all your favorite downtown restaurants.
Be on the lookout for Jeff's TikTok.
And you could go to the Orpheum and go to the Majestic and have a nice meal before the Orpheum. Go see the Grizzlies now that they're back in action again soon. Memphis Tiger basketball starting up. Stay at your downtown hotel and enjoy yourselves. Now, we don't need some kind of a lottery because some will want it for New Year's week,
right,
or whatever
obviously,
else.
Yeah.
They're different weeks, but whatever. We'll work that out. As you point out, this is just the idea phase. Anyway.
I think every taxpayer could have a right to a room, but obviously if you pay more in taxes, you can get the better rooms on the better dates.
You think that's how it should work?
Listen, if you want to do the lottery system, that's fine, but the lottery system brings in a lot of questions.
Let me ask you, do people who pay more taxes, should they get their own lane on 240?
That's not how it works. In fairness, 240 isn't 240 run by the federal government?
I guess that is true. I guess it is. Should they get better trash pickup? No, that's not how it works. It's not how public services work. This is a public enterprise, man. Anyway, Sam Hardiman will join us. We'll run that idea by Sam when he joins us in the second hour. So we got John Martin. Then Chris Harrington, straight up, close to it, 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman after that. We do have a lot to get to. One of the things that we'll ask Chris about is Jaren Jackson Jr. At some point, you're just like, come on, man, seriously? Come on. Now, the word from Taylor Jenkins was some tightness in the hamstring. Who among us, right? Who among us?
I mean, that's technically me every day.
There's going to be doing some imaging. They're going to be doing some imaging.
Oh, boy.
Imaging. And we are not sure of the timeline. What is your level of concern with one being What's one? What's one? One is nothing. One is three is Cam Spencer out with a foot injury, right? Out with an ankle for a couple weeks. Whatever for how long he's out. But 10 is John going down for the season, right?
Yeah, I'm somewhere around a three. I mean, to me, hamstrings can be lingering, but at least if you're going to...
Hamstrings can be lingering.
But if you're going to pull your hamstring, pull it first day of camp.
Is that when you want to pull it?
Yeah.
Because then you're not missing anything. You're going to recover. You're going to be fine.
Yes.
I think that's right. It is true that one of the interesting things, and I do want to talk about this with Chris, one of the interesting things is they... And Chris doesn't seem particularly engaged in the whole new assistant coach, new offense, new whatever conversation, right? Drew seems more interested in that than Chris has, just observing it. And
I agree.
I may be overstating it, but there was a lot yesterday about that, that there's going to be a lot more movement off the ball. Taylor Jenkins said the amount of movement off the ball is significantly different. And then Drew, in his piece, said that Ja is going to be off the ball more, and Zach Edey will no longer, quote-unquote, roam from block to block. That's what Zach Edey was put on this earth to do, to roam from block to block. So, but here's the point. As you are reimagining the offense, which they appear to be doing, right, Jaren is critical to all of it.
Certainly given a new coat of paint.
This is our new terminology, new coat of paint, something. This is what, and this is the point that Chris has made. There's lots of things that work, lots of combinations that work in the front court for the Grizzlies. All of them involve Jaren.
Yes.
And so if Jaren is not available, if he's obviously not even available as they install this, it's kind of cumbersome and inconvenient. And slows down the process. Certainly, if he is not available when they're actually implementing it in games, that will be a hell of a note, is what my father would say. Well, that's a hell of a note. at my dad's memorial service, I referred to some dadisms, and there was it was right before COVID. It was 2 weeks before COVID. When I was driving back from it, I remember looking up at the TVs at a rest stop, and they were talking about this thing, this outbreak in Seattle. That was literally when I was driving back. They were whatever. There were 300-400 people, whatever it was, at my dad's memorial service, and Dad would have loved it, and he would have said. He said he would have thought the fact that he wasn't there to enjoy it and to say a few words was a hell of a note. It would have been a hell of a note. But anyway, so it would be a hell of a note if Jaren isn't available to actually to participate in this new offense when we get there. We'll talk more about that with Chris straight up at 10 o'clock. I do hope. Is it too much to ask, Jeffrey, to get through? I was going to say today. How about the rest of the week? How about the Nashville trip? Without any further injury reports of the new, fresh, negative variety.
Jeff, we only take it one day at a time here.
I guess we do.
So we start with, let's get through today.
All right. So there you go. Obviously, we had a full day of baseball yesterday. Anything particularly stand out for you there? Good, the Tigers Astros, unbelievable pitching performance, great pitching performance from Tigers. They're going to have to staple it together a little bit going forward now, but they just got to win one or two.
They got to win one or two. Man, I'll admit, in the end innings, I was like, Houston's going to come back and win this. So I thought that was great for Detroit. I mean, it's an unreal story. They actually can play the nobody believed in us card,
they
including our owners.
Including them, right.
Like,
them.
They sold it at the deadline.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Nobody believed in them.
Including us. We also didn't believe in us.
Correct.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
So while that trope can be overdone, I will allow the Tigers to use it. The Kansas City-Baltimore game, you kind of feel for Baltimore. It's like you get the unreal pitching performance. But like,
that's not good enough. It's why he got him. He did what he's supposed to do.
Losing a 1-0 playoff game is just the worst.
And meanwhile, the Mets and the Padres, I mean, the Mets and the Braves had very different travel experiences.
Indeed, they did. The Mets strike me as the team right now that, like, they have gotten super hot, and that's like the wild card team you don't want to see. Because they're not, like... When you think of how the Mets were trying to do it. It felt like they were trying to do it with like dominant pitching. Right now, what the Mets are doing is like, all right, we'll just post a number. We're going to go up, we're going to swing it, and we're going to keep posting a number and see if you can catch us. And then with the Braves, I mean, I'm not going to hold that against them. I mean, you know what I mean? Like you
No. You can't possibly hold it against them.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. But what I really want to talk about was all this college stuff, Jeffrey. I think I said last week when I was doing my best to explain what I thought. This is before Ed Scott actually spoke and did a fine job in his own right. But when I was imagining what he could say to fire up the fans, to restore hope in this moment, I made the point that if you think that this is over, this is it, you're naive. It has been going on for 30, 40 years, and the notion that this is all of a sudden going to come grinding to a halt is hopelessly naive and pessimistic. And of course, there will be another day. That other day turns out to be this week. Who knows? We'll see. But before I get into the particulars of what may or may not be happening, I did get a text from Doug. Doug's a listener. And he said, went to the Memphis Middle Tennessee State game, had a great time. There were 25,000 people there, and we all enjoyed it, even though it was raining and it was nasty. Then to hear you come on the radio and act so depressed because we're not in Alabama, come on, man. We do the best we can, and all of our fans enjoyed ourselves. We don't have to be the top dogs to have a good time and enjoy ourselves. Still a great university and doing the best we can, and you should be more positive. I'll be honest. So I read that because I take that to heart. I don't think anyone in this city needs more people crapping on things in this city, particularly at this moment. And I mean that much more broadly than just sports in this city. The epidemic of self-loathing in this city, listen, there's problems, and the problems lead to perception, but at some point the perception overtakes the reality, and it just becomes unrelentingly negative. It's interesting. There was a brief moment in, feels like in our history, when there was this burst of boosterism, and we slapped 901 on everything we could think of, on T-shirts and on beers and on soccer teams. We named everything 901. And that moment, and maybe we got a little too far ahead of ourselves, a little too boosterish, but the pendulum has swung way too far in the other direction. And I have a friend who, anytime someone starts just ripping Memphis, she just starts rattling off all the good things about Memphis. And, the zoo ranks third in the country, like whatever else. Another friend today posted that how long it took him to get from his house to the airport to sitting down at the gate, whatever. I think it was roughly 11 minutes or something like that, right? And so you could spend just as much time waxing.
Last time I was at the airport, the moving sidewalks walked everywhere, like from the garage.
They all worked everywhere?
Yes, everything worked.
Anyway.
Two elevators.
If you want to just lament how much you hate this place and it must be the single most place, worst place in the universe, like, knock yourself out. But I get sick of it. And I think it's toxic. It's not helpful. It's not constructive. And I don't like to add to it. I also like to try to be honest. And so when I said what I said, I honestly felt kind of bad saying it. It is what struck me about Saturday night. Like, and it was lamenting what I was doing was lamenting the gap. I lament the gap, and I lament that the people who are in charge of college sports don't give a flip. They don't give a flip about the health of the whole at all. They just don't. All they care about is enriching themselves or their particular institution. And so, you know, and someone asked both me and Jeffrey on Twitter about this new Super League that's been proposed
By the way, I'd like to point out, I don't think this is new. This is the
It's not new. It's the same one we came out. But they came out with more details.
Correct.
They
have graphics this
time. It's newish, and they've given more details. We have many more details. We have particulars of it. It's college sports tomorrow, a proposed Super League. And I'll be completely clear. I think this is absolutely a dramatically better plan than reality. Dramatically. Because among other things, and it was interesting that Jimmy Haslam is so involved in this, but among other things, they say this involves so many more schools. It's not a shrinking universe. It's expanding the universe. Because what they're proposing is to take of the 136 schools currently play football, the top 72 would be in Power 12 conferences. There'd be 12 16-team divisions, and then there would be 64 teams in a group of eight conferences. And even those 64, you could be promoted. There would be no relegation from the top to the bottom, and I don't know exactly how this would work, but there would be the chance for promotion among the 64. And yes, as many Memphians have noticed, included in the 72 would be Memphis. Memphis would be in the South Division with LSU, Arkansas, Houston, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. And so you would have 72 teams in these, instead of talking about shrinking it to, you know, just the Big Ten and just the SEC and
maybe the Big 12.
Or maybe some whatever slices or having an equitable or, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC get this much and then the Big 12 and the ACC get much less but still some. And like just contending to slice up the haves and the have-nots and drawing even more distinct differences between the haves and the have-nots. What you have is you have a big league that incorporates everybody. Now, some won't be happy, like Boise State is in the group of 72 as opposed to the group of 64 as opposed to the group of 72. Boise State wouldn't like that. So is Tulane, I think. But then the other thing is they also propose how to deal with some other things. They say we would collectively bargain. They're asking for a new law that would allow them to collectively bargain with their with players without calling them employees. I don't know that Congress would have any stomach to do that, but that's what they would like. They would like to have pooled broadcast rights, which are probably a violation of antitrust law, but whatever. And so there'd be enormous paycheck from the networks to the Super League. I think it sounds spectacular and utterly impractical, because why the hell would the SEC and the Big Ten give up their favored position? They wouldn't. I mean, whatever. Like, there's some interesting people involved with this. Oddly enough, Danny White is a supporter of the idea from the University of Tennessee. Grant Hill is on the committee.
What was the first
Jimmy
thing?
Haslam
what was
the is on the committee.
And why do you think Danny White might be supporting the idea?
Why is Danny White supporting the idea?
Repeat the last two things you just said.
Oh, Jimmy Haslam. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but it's. Of course, it's how it is looking at the big picture as opposed to the smaller picture. But if you're the SEC or the Big Ten, you don't give a damn about that. You just like, how do we get more? So the whole thing stinks. And so it was not when I said what I said Monday, I was just down, honestly. I was lamenting. I do think the point that Doug made, though, is absolutely right. And this is what this dovetails into a column that John wrote today about basketball at the University of Memphis. Here's the thing. Occasionally, from the first time I got here in 96, I hear people saying, drop football. Memphis should drop football. I've written multiple times what a stupid idea that is. For A, yes, football drives realignment, whatever else. B, and more importantly, people like it.
Yeah.
People like it. As he said, 25,000 people went. That's even if there were 20 actually there, that's about four times as many as went to any Tiger basketball game last year.
Yeah.
And they had a good time. And they ate chicken wings and barbecue and drank beer and were with their neighbors and were in Midtown Memphis having a high old time enjoying each other and the community. And that's what, in the end, Memphis football will be about. Memphis football is never going to, and it's okay. You know, they're never going to beat Ohio State. You know, they're never going to win a national championship. I think we can, I think we can say that, you know. And it can still be fun. It doesn't, you know, the idea of disbanding it or neglect, I do think, though, it does make you ponder. We may agree that the original sin for the University of Memphis in terms of the realignment discussion was undervaluing football, right? Way back when.
I think yeah, if you're doing the timeline of saying, okay, where does
what
the,
went wrong? Yes, early 2000s, yes. Late 19, whatever, like whatever.
When football was clearly driving the bus.
When Louisville realized, yes, we're going to build a new stadium, we're going to invest in football, and
we're
Memphis did.
We're going to pay coaches.
That
even
was the
though,
mistake.
Yes.
Now, here's the question. Now, though, being that we are where we are, and this is the point that John makes in his column, which you can read at the Daily Memphian, I've tweeted it out. Should we not think about basketball as a high priority at the University of Memphis in all future realignment discussions? Because whatever has happened to football, the truth of the matter is, it's some version of what it's always been. Memphis football, and you can even argue that it's a better version because it does technically have a shot at the playoff, right? It doesn't have Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Tennessee and Arkansas coming in here like it used to. So it's diminished in that way. But the schedule isn't as good. But it always was a fun distraction on a Saturday. That's what it has always been. That is operated outside the power structure. It is some version, a different version, but it's some version of what it has always been. Memphis football is now, right?
Yeah, I think slightly better, but yes, I'm with you.
Memphis,
I think, because like
there's more
pros. Like, if you do like what probably the last 10 to 15 years, there's on average more pros. So I think they're a better
version. But yes, there's been more winning.
Correct.
The schedule has been diminished. Whatever else, but yes, and there's also been more competence, more investment.
Well, and there's also more freedom of movement for players, so you're able to take advantage of some situations probably that wouldn't have happened in the past.
But Memphis basketball is a shadow of what it has been. If you think about Memphis basketball, and I know people can say, and Jarvis may text me here, I love Jarvis and I love his optimism. And Jarvis has never been going to be accused of being one of those people who's just negative for the sake of negative. You can say all you want that you should support your own team. But the truth of the matter is Memphis basketball was built on trekking down to the state, to the arena, whether it was the Mid-South Coliseum or the Pyramid or FedEx Forum, and watching epic games against epic programs, whether it was Louisville or whether it was Cincinnati or whether it was even most recently in the diminished AAC, Houston. You want to see your team playing in meaningful games. And it's not just that's what Memphis basketball was built on. That's what college basketball is built on. Duke and North Carolina and going into Kansas. And like, that's what college basketball is supposed to be about, not some drab matchup against South Florida. And if you look at Memphis's schedule now, that's literally all it is. Like, starting January 1, that is all it is. And so the point is, when Ed Scott said it was a bad deal to not take the deal with the Pac last week, when he said that, I take him at his word. It was a bad deal. But as he thinks about the next deal and as he thinks about the future, you have to do something about basketball. And obviously, this point was sharpened yesterday when the news became official that Gonzaga was going to the Pac. Now, I never doubted it. When Brett McMurphy reported it, it was done. And the stupid people yesterday going at Brett, Now, Brett was a little gangster about it because when Brett,
yeah, but you know what? He earned the right to take a victory lap.
He earned the right to do it. Brett reported that Gonzaga was going to the pack, and then various people crapped on that report, particularly Nicole Auerbach. And this is the truth. As a reporter, if you are ripping someone's report, you can always get someone to say, it's not done yet. No, it's not. No, 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 no.
That's the easiest thing to get in the world. Hold on now.
Yeah, and then you say, not true, but it's going to be true. You look like the idiot. Because you look like the idiot because it's going to be true. It's just a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. The decision has been made. And so
they are negotiating.
I guess the Karl Anthony Towns deal wasn't official till today. But if you reported it over the weekend, you were accurate. You nailed it. And Brett nailed it last week. And so I never doubted that Gonzaga was going to go. And I think it makes it a little even more bittersweet that Memphis isn't a part of it. Not saying that they should have taken a bad deal. My whole point was I lamented it wasn't a better deal.
Yes.
I lamented that they didn't give them $20 million of the exit fee so they could take the deal. That's all I'm saying.
Or
even half. And then comes the news today. Hitman Hoops has reported, but I'd heard this other places as well, that discussions with the pack may be continuing. Now, what's really interesting is that yesterday you had, who was it from CBS?
Brandon Marcello.
Yeah, Brandon Marcello. He reported, and he used capital letters, Memphis has not, or the pack has not, capital N-O-T, re-engaged with Memphis. Now, that was a curious thing to tweet out on a Tuesday just out of the blue. And here's the point. It wasn't out of the blue. The only reason you would say Memphis has not re-engaged with is because you're here is because there's some people saying that they have.
Yeah.
Right. It was in response to something.
Right.
And it was in it's a response to what Hitman had been hearing and what others have been hearing. They're still talking. And in fact, if you listen to it, Ed Scott, if you listen to the press conference, he's asked explicitly, would you be willing to continue conversations? And he said, yes. He said, I'll pick up the phone. He said it's a bad deal.
Yeah.
That's what he said. If the deal changes, it may no longer be a bad deal. So I'm not here to predict whether it will meaningfully change. It's pretty clear this was easy for Memphis to turn down. I'm not saying it should have been. Easy for a lot of people to turn down.
And did Memphis make it easier for everyone else that's sitting there
Memphis
going?
Memphis made it easier for saying it. But once Memphis, but in order, so I don't think a little tweaking of the deal by the pack is going to get Memphis interested again. I think it would require significant movement on the part of the pack. They thought it was a laughable deal. And so,
yeah, I think it would require unlikely.
I think unlikely.
I
think you and I agree on that. But do you agree with the fundamental perspective that John makes that the real victim here in terms of Memphis sports has been basketball, and that the fate of basketball and the future of basketball has to be a very high priority when they're thinking about what comes next?
So those are two separate questions, in my opinion.
Okay, we'll take them in turn.
So the first one, I think the answer to that is yes. Do I think Memphis basketball has been also... Do I think Memphis basketball has also played a part?
Oh, no, in their own demise.
Correct.
Yes, absolutely. No. This would always be better. There is always the option to run the league when you're in a watered-down league. And Memphis has not done that.
Correct.
So I'm not saying that Memphis is not a part of their own destruction here, whether it was the hiring of Tubby or whether it was some of the missteps under Penny or whatever else. Yes.
And then some of it is out of their control. When you get into this universe where SEC schools are making, you know, $80 million a year from their league, well, all of a sudden they got to spend it on something. And so they've started spending on basketball because basketball is another way to make money. And now you've reached this point where...
That's part of being victimized, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. And so I'm saying that this is where I do think it comes into play. The second question, I think, is a little bit more complicated. One thing that I do think has gotten completely left out of the discussion, and I totally do not dismiss it, I think this league is getting very, very hard to recruit to. And I do not enjoy whenever someone goes, well, Gonzaga survives it. Gonzaga has become its own thing and its own brand. And does that mean that
Gonzaga's also switching leagues?
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like Gonzaga is, you know, and they've, and honestly,
and they've been in discussions to switch leagues for a long time.
They've been trying to get
it's
out.
Not like, yeah, it's not like they're like, oh, we love it out here. They're doing
Gonzaga,
the best they can.
The reality is, if Gonzaga had a football program, they probably would have been gone long, long ago. But that's right. They just don't. But to me, it's like whenever anyone uses the Gonzaga example, it's like that's not really like they are isolated in a part of the country where they are like the only brand. They've kind of become West Coast Duke. And so it's its own thing. And I don't like when people use that example. But there is no question in my mind what hurts recruiting wise is the league that you are in. When you start getting close on recruits and they have other options, they choose to go to the other option. And I think that's because of the
league. So another reason why Memphis has been victimized. I guess the question would be, when I say it should be a priority, basketball should be a priority as in what they're thinking, here's that argument would be as follows. Football is never going to be other than what it is, which is lovely and fun and enjoyable. And the truth of the matter is I've gotten to the point where I enjoy going to the football games more than I enjoy going to the basketball games because, A, it's such a great scene on Tiger Lane. And
whatever reason, it's a better mood. I don't know why, but it is.
Maybe some of it is because with basketball, you're always comparing it to what it once was or should be. You know what I mean? It feels kind of desolate compared to what it once was or should be. You feel like basketball should be 15,000 people in here playing Houston, and instead it's 4,000 people in here playing East Carolina. And so it feels a little sad where I don't. Like, even people, I've heard griping about the 23,000 people who came that it should be 30, but I don't think it feels sad at all. Like, I went to the opener. I thought it felt like it was a great time. I think people had a great time. And but my point is, Memphis football is what it is going to be some version of what it all, you know, there's a ceiling.
Sure.
And so, what you should be doing, let's be honest, it's what UConn did, is UConn said, listen, This is what people care about, and there's no ceiling, and we're going to go take care of basketball. That's what they did. Now, UConn's thinking of redoing that, too.
Well, I mean, it's to me, like, so then
and I'm not saying junk football or independent.
I get what you're saying, but the other question is, like, UConn seems to me like they basically have said, we care about really two things, our men's basketball program and our women's basketball program. We don't really care about what else happens to the rest. Whereas I don't think Memphis has come out. I don't think they feel that way. I think they like being good in women's soccer. I think they aspire to have opportunities.
I have no idea. It's possible UConn also cares about women's soccer. I don't know. Do they not?
Financially, it seems like they don't because they are in a world of debt. Because that's the other thing that makes UConn unique. The school administrators have been wanting to go somewhere where they can get a guaranteed check, but the boosters sit there and go, we like being in the Big East, and we're willing to do that.
I guess my big question would be, the question that I would ask myself to challenge my what does it mean to say that you should make basketball a higher priority? Like, it's fine to say that. What does that functionally mean?
I think what it functionally means is even if you are taking a hit, you go and you join that league because that league is unquestionably a better league.
But I'm not saying they should make a bad deal to join the league, but that league had five teams now with Gonzaga, five teams in it that were in the NCAA tournament last year.
Well, I mean,
it is another reason that I never thought it was just crazy to think about joining that league, despite the distance, because it is a dramatically better league, particularly for basketball. You get, again, I'm not saying they should take a bad deal. I'm just lamenting that the deal wasn't better that would allow them.
And to be clear, it's a dramatically better league in football as well.
In football,
but it's just
even more.
But to your point, that. Even though it's a dramatically better league, you're still kind of in the same tier.
The glamour game in football is still Boise State, which is not like...
It's the same tier as what you're talking about.
Memphis Gonzaga is different in basketball is different than Memphis Boise State in football.
100%.
We'll talk more about this with John Martin in the next segment, but I want to affirm my dedication to walking on the sunny side of the street as part of all of this, as we negotiate ourselves through this. through this thicket. And listen, I'm with Jimmy Haslam. If they want to do that plan, I'm all for it. I think you're going to have to do some arm twisting with the folks from the SEC and the Big Ten. We got Chris Harrington straight up 10 o'clock. We got Sam Hardiman to talk about this new hotel that we own. That's really going to be great for all of us who want to stay downtown. And we'll do all of that. John Martin coming up next. Before then, I will tell you, if you are getting something framed, preserving a memory from all time, that's what framing does. You take these photographs, this memorabilia, and you have something to display on your wall to give to your kids. It's preserving memories. That's what framing does. And you can frame stuff yourself. But my point is that the Frame Corner is what they specialize in is custom framing. Do an absolutely magnificent job of making your memories look spectacular and last forever. It's the Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com, 5035 Park Avenue, 5035 Park Avenue. Got to take a break. It's Wednesday on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by John Martin, Jason and John, every single day from 11 to 2. I'm an avid listener myself. John, I was accused, someone accused me yesterday because I was being negative about something. And the accusation was that you are rubbing off on me. That's what Doug says. That you are rubbing off on me. Do you consider yourself to be negative, John?
Absolutely not. I consider myself to be a realist. And I consider myself to be somebody that doesn't waste his time on unreasonable hopes and dreams for the sake of unreasonable hopes and dreams.
Before I see how that applies to you, the column that you wrote for the Daily Memphian that I've tweeted out, people can read it over there. Powerful column about Memphis basketball. I did want to make sure I get to it. Davante Adams has requested a trade. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame him.
Did you like it when they acquired him? Were you a fan?
Loved it. Loved it when they acquired Antonio Brown. You know, I mean, both those guys were awesome. Then they get to the Raiders, and I will say this for Davante: like, he was a pro. He wanted to come to the Raiders because he was not going to get paid with the Packers, and his college teammate was the quarterback of the Raiders, and Derek Carr. And so the Raiders made a lot of sense. They needed a number one receiver. His college quarterback was the team's quarterback, and it just made sense for everybody. So the Raiders traded the first and second pick to get him. Derek Carr is here. And, you know, then after a year, they move off Derek Carr. So that vision comes crashing down. And then instead of playing with Derek Carr, he's playing with Aiden O'Connell, right? So and then now he's playing with Gardner Minshew. And so, you know, he's 31 years old. I think he's about to be 32. You know, I mean, he doesn't have long left in this league. I mean, and this franchise is a rudderless ship. It's not going anywhere. I don't blame him at all. I mean, I think it would be ridiculous for him to not ask for a trade. I can't believe he's lasted this long.
Well, in part, though, like, he made his bed, like he just wanted to go there for the money, you know, and now he's there. No one thought they were going to be good when he got there, and now he went, got his money, and now he wants to go somewhere that's good.
He was good. Like Randy Moss got traded to the Raiders, and he was a nightmare, right? He was unprofessional. He was mailing it in. He didn't work hard. I mean, Devontae did. You know, I have nothing but bad, but good things to say about Devontae Adams. I've always appreciated his effort and his work ethic. You know, and I'm, and on one hand, I'm happy about it because, well, actually, on every level.
What do you want for him? What do you want for him?
I don't really care. You know, it doesn't really. Yeah, you know, I want him to go somewhere where he's happy. And he has a chance
to
win.
You're like a humanitarian, humanitarian. And you like it because you want the Raiders to lose.
I'm also happy because it makes the Raiders worse.
Right.
Like, we need to be bad. Because until you fully embrace being bad, you will sort of toil in this no man's land that you find yourself in of 7-9 wins every single year where you're going absolutely nowhere. You can't compete. You can't contend. You don't have a franchise quarterback. You don't even have a chance to get a franchise quarterback. And it's just like, what are you doing? Where are you going? And so, you know, I think this helps the Raiders sort of commit to that direction a lot faster.
Where
so I'm in favor of it.
I mostly don't want him to go to Kansas City. It's okay if he goes to the Jets, even though they're in the Bills division, because the Jets aren't that good anyway, right? I don't think Devontae Adams puts the Jets over the top, but he certainly doesn't help matters if he goes to the Chiefs. So don't need him going to the Chiefs.
That's off the table. I think Shefty took that off the table.
I think I saw that. And then and the Jets seems logical, and that's okay. We could survive that. So, all right.
I wish him well.
Onward to your column. Passionate column, John. What inspired you to write this column about how essentially essence was as, and there's more news or whatever, there's more rumors or whatnot about Memphis and realignment. Your point is that they should really think and care more about Memphis basketball when they're making these realignment decisions?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, listen, some people don't like my style, okay? Some people just don't like my style, but there are certain unalienable truths that I sort of live my life by. And one of those truths is that Memphis basketball is a great program. It's a great program. The results have not matched that the last 10 years. I addressed that in the piece. But when you consider history, investment, ambition, NIL, recruiting, all of these things, pro players, Memphis has certainly, I think, cemented itself as one of the top 30 to 35 programs in college basketball. And the reality of the situation is that as it currently stands, Memphis is probably just not going to survive as that in this league. They're just not.
You looked into the league a little bit. I mean, we all know it's a crappy league, but some of the things you pointed out were pretty startling.
Yeah, so six current teams in the league, which is almost half. I thought it was seven. It's actually six because Tulsa made one in 2016, thank God. But six teams in the league have active tournament droughts of over a decade. Over 10 years. Seven teams in this league have winning percentages all time under 500. Do you know how hard that is to do? Under 500 in college basketball where everybody wins 20 games, right? Everybody wins 20 games a year, except in this league where seven teams have under 500 winning percentages all time. Memphis obviously is at the top of everything. They're at the top of Final Four. If you combine every other team in this league's Final Fours since 1966, they have the same number of Final Fours as Memphis. The same.
Who's been?
All of them. Every single one.
Who's been? Who are the three?
Charlotte randomly went in 1977.
Cornbread Maxwell. Yeah,
Wichita State went in 2013.
Yep.
And then FAU made that miracle run in 2023. And they weren't even in the AAC. Like, none of those teams were in the AAC, right? Like, none of those teams were actually in the AAC when they did it, but that's not the point, right? But you're talking about two Final Four runs in the last 10 years that were sort of miracles, and both of those programs have returned to the mean. okay? And Charlotte, it just made the rain win in 77.
So all this comes in wake of the, obviously, the decision last week not to go to the pack. And then there was this, literally the day that Memphis said they're not going to the pack, the news broke that Gonzaga was going to the pack. And that, right. that makes it a little bittersweet. Are you...
That's a nice way to put it. A little bittersweet.
Are you?
Maybe want to jump off a bridge.
Are you prepared to say that Ed Scott made the wrong decision in not taking a bad deal? Is that the implication here?
I've been on the train the whole time that for basketball I would just figure out a way to make it work. I just think any decision to remain in the AAC is regrettable, no matter what your justification may be. You know, because when you say that the Pac-12 offered a bad deal, it sort of implies that you don't already have a bad deal, that you're not already living in a bad deal. My brother, you are living in a shanty town. I mean, you are living in the slums in the AAC. So it might have been a bad deal, but you're living a bad deal. That's your life. That's every day you wake up, you're in a bad deal. So that was the part of it that, like, I know people like love to throw that around, but it just ignores like the reality of what Memphis is facing. I want to address a few things. One, Memphis averaged 6,400 fans last year, or I think it might have been a little more. Maybe it was like 6,800. I apologize, 6,800 turnstile. That's not announced. That's turnstile, right? And that's where you get your money from the Grizzlies, whatever. They averaged 6,800. That's down from 7,400 and change the year prior. Now you're going to have absolutely no games past 2020, the calendar year 2024, that anybody cares about. The home schedule is abominable. It's harrowing to consider what those numbers are going to be in 2024 this season. I fear for Memphis. So you need to find a way to re-engage your fan base. You need to find a way to reinvigorate your fan base too. And this is for the basketball sort of day to day. What is your plan, Dr. Scott, to ensure that your basketball program has a chance to enhance its resume past December 31st? Because right now, there are no quad one opportunities in the AAC using Bart Torvik's projections in the preseason. Not one, not two, not three, zero. Not a single game Memphis plays in the AAC will be a quad one opportunity. So, What is the plan to help Memphis enhance its tournament resume past December, as opposed to just having to move heaven and earth not to tank it? Because I pointed this out in the column, 11-7 is what Memphis went in the AAC last season. 11-7, the Big 12 gets you a 3 seed, which is what Baylor was last year. That's the Big 12. 11-7 in the AAC gets you declining an NIT invitation because you're ashamed of yourself. I hear, you know, that, oh, we didn't like the deal, we didn't like, but what's the plan, bro? Like, what are you going to do? And the third thing I want to address, too, and this is very important, and I put this in the column preemptively because I knew I was going to get it, almost like people didn't read the column, but I'm firing it back at them anyway. People will say, how can you argue Memphis deserves better when they've never won the AAC? See, no. What you're doing is you're conflating coach performance with prestige of program, and you can't do that. You can't do that, because if you remove Jim Boeheim from Syracuse, tell me how it looks. If you remove Mark Few from Gonzaga, tell me how it looks. Probably looks a lot different, right? So just because Memphis has had a string of iffy coaching hires doesn't mean that the investment isn't there, doesn't mean that the ambition isn't there, doesn't mean the recruiting isn't there, doesn't mean that tradition isn't there. All those
things. One of the interesting things, back to the question is whether you're negative or positive, what's interesting is some would say this is a very negative take yet, but it's not really. It's grounded in the positive truth that you think the program is a great program, and it is being
mistreated. I think it's elite, and I think and it's like, look, if I'm the last one fighting for Memphis basketball and its status, then so be it. I'll be the last one fighting for it. But I just don't understand how, like, you had Houston up until last season, right? So you still had something. You still had a little something to hold on to. You had Cincinnati. You had UCF. You had, you had a little bit that you could still hold on to. But now that those teams are gone, SMU is even gone. So now that all those teams are out, I don't get how it's not keeping people up at night, that they're allowing their basketball program, which we could say all the
good things.
How about
we should just, how about you just go support your own team? Go support your own team. Just support the Tigers, John. It doesn't matter who they're playing.
But you know what? It does. It always does. It always matters. You want to have, because guess what? That's what gets television, right? Compelling matchups. When you think about college basketball, you think about rivalries. You think about Tobacco Road. You think about those Big East battles, right? You think about all those things. It does matter. I mean, think about the chair throwing with Fred Horton. And I mean, like, that.
Yeah, he didn't throw his chair playing East Carolina. It was Louisville that he threw his chair.
You got to have that bad blood, you know? And it's like, There's literally nothing compelling whatsoever about the league that they find themselves in, and so.
Do you put? I gotta get you to go because I've got to. But here's the question: do you put any stock in this idea that Memphis is reengaging with the Pack?
I mean, you know, Hitman reported it, so you know, there's got to be something there. Somebody is saying something somewhere, but I don't know how you go from 2.5 to working out a deal.
Yeah.
You know, just feels like they're too far apart, but. I hope that I'm wrong.
John, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
That's John Martin, 11 to 2, every single day with Jason Smith. I will be listening. We got Chris Harrington from Nashville coming up next. He's a Grizzlies training camp. Before then, I will tell you, if you're selling your house, you might see houses out there with the for sale sign in the yard, and they just sit and sit and sit and sit and sit. It feels like lately particular. That's why you need someone who knows how to market your home, and that would be Josh Heisa. Jody was selling her home and had heard about us right here on the radio. And she's like, well, Josh seems to know how to market. Let's give him a call. Literally within a week, 8 offers. Literally within a week, 8 offers. It's no accident that Josh is on the radio. He's on the radio marketing his services, and then he markets your home with the same aggressiveness. One of the things that makes Josh Heisa a different kind of realtor. There are others, by the way, as well. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. It's Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty. The phone number is 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers. .com. Chris Harrington, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.